everyone. Welcome to episode 11 of 4Js in a Comic Book. With me, as always, JP from PandaManga.com.
What's up?
Along with the Vicious Joe, also from PandaManga.com.
Hello, hello.
And my good friend, Mr. Justin Woods from AskAMetalhead.com.
What's up, guys?
And finally, me, John Harder from Waterfront Comics.
I was Justin on the last episode, too, just in case you guys didn't get that.
Tonight, Justin. The role of Justin will be played by Justin.
Justin Case.
Oh, man.
Justin Time.
I've never heard that one before. Said me never.
Shit. Tonight, we will be discussing Captain America. Specifically, the relaunch Captain America by Rick Remender and John Romita Jr., a favorite of the 4Js podcast from Kick-Ass.
Old JRJR.
I will say that the art in this book, there were things that bothered me about it.
Really?
I loved it. I loved it a lot. I really did. But there were parts of it, again, that I kept on feeling like, this really just, because it's, you know, the first time you see it, it's so incredibly distinct for Kick-Ass. And it, I think it really sets Kick-Ass. It sets the mood and theme of Kick-Ass a lot. So to see it here as well, I felt like it was a bit blocky.
Right. So if you've mostly only ever seen Romita Jr. doing Kick-Ass, and then you come to this, it's kind of like, whoa, this is weird. Yeah. It's like Captain Kick-Ass. Yeah.
My wife, Jamie, she absolutely hates John Romita Jr.'s art. Every time she sees one, she's like, God damn it. You know, he always draws the kids with the heads that are too giant.
And dude, the heads are really giant on the kids.
But little kids have giant heads.
That's what I tell her. And it's...
Ask any woman. They'll tell you. That kid's head is fucking enormous.
Yes.
It's true. The bane of all fathers. Kids with giant heads.
It's its own planetoid. Anyhow, I mean, I didn't dislike the art. It's just there were moments where I was like, okay. But yeah.
So in episode 8, we attempted to discuss the Avengers relaunch from Marvel Now. Mm-hmm. And we kind of failed miserably about getting that read. So we gave a little bit more bite-sized chunk of this one. It was a 10-issue story, which was much more doable than the 26 issues I tried to spring on you guys.
Yeah, that was a lot of reading.
You know, I actually read something else by Hickman, Red Mass from Mars.
Great book.
It's very good. Learned something in the end credits of it that I did not know. Hickman's twin brother is the executive producer of Shark Week.
Oh, man, somebody needs to email him about the horrific Shark Week that we had this year.
Just random fact.
I did not know that. That's good stuff. That's good random knowledge.
Take that, the Brian.
Shit.
Yeah.
Speaking of sharks, anyone seen Sharknado?
Not yet, but I would totally be down to watch it.
I have no interest in seeing that. I have no interest.
I'll watch.
Octopus NATO, maybe. Shark NATO, no, I'm not interested. Cuttlefish NATO, hell yes.
We need to like figure out a way where, like, we can do like a Mystery Science 3000 or Rift Tracks for that of all of us.
That'd be fun. We could totally do that.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Because we're that funny and insightful. maybe we might get like 20.
My understanding is that trying to do riff tracks is actually really hard.
Huh. I would think it would be.
It is. I mean, you have to watch the movie ad nauseum over and over
and have,
you know, write up some good ideas, and then you have to deliver them after you figured it out. A lot of that is not
so
instantaneous, right. Just ad lib. A lot of that is on purpose.
It's completely different than our podcast.
Completely. Whatever. So we have notes sometimes.
Yes, we
do. Occasionally.
I was actually talking to one of the customers the other day about the podcast, and he was like, you guys get so deep into the books. And I'm like, wow, thanks for listening. You know?
Did he like that? Or was so deep?
No, he liked it a lot. He's like, I really don't, you know, when I read it, you know, I just read it and then I'm done. And he's like, I never think to go back and like actually like pay attention to.
Yeah, it definitely changes your perspective. So that's cool. That's cool that you got that kind of feedback.
That's awesome. I'm really glad that people are appreciating it like that, because we certainly spend a lot of time and energy trying to glean all of the goodies, because there's a lot there.
Even if Even if you read the entire comic book and realize at the end that you were completely and utterly wrong, as I am or was reading Saga. And I was so convinced at the end of that book, at the end of that series, that the art, that the author was like oblivious, literally just
right.
Like, yeah, that he was really just talking about how horrible his book was and he wrote it, you know, just for the paycheck. And then you guys were like, no, no, he was just trying to throw them off the scent. And I was like, what? What is this wizardry? And then it hit me. I was like, oh my God, you're an idiot. Can you please just delete that whole 30 minutes?
You know, I think that's probably one of my favorite things about doing podcasts about comics is that it forces you to appreciate it because you got to come up with something to say. You can't just go, well, they did this, then this happened, and then they walked over there, and then they attacked these guys, and this person won, and then they were done, and that's it. All right,
it was
cool.
Good.
And it was fun.
I liked it.
It's like,
what I learned from Astro City, it's not good to review a bunch of one-issue stories that make up a trade.
Mm.
You know,
you have to do that for every single
You have to
arc.
Do that, yeah. You had to do it like six times for one trade. And, you know, with this being a 10-part story arc that goes through two hardcovers,
right,
you know, it's a little bit more meaty to fill the hour up with.
Definitely, definitely. And it's a little less scatterbrained having so many different short stories, you know, because you need to give everybody a basic idea of what we're talking about. And so we basically have to tell a kajillion stories instead of give the cliff notes and then dig into its meaning.
Anyway. Right.
So what are we talking about again today?
We're actually talking about Marvel Now's relaunch of Captain America. Not a relaunch like DC did that angered many and made many people drop books, but a kind of a refreshing. It started with a new number one, but all the continuity from the past however many years still exists. But it was cleaned up in a nice, fresh way.
Yeah, it didn't leave me wondering who was who for the most part. And, you know, even if there were a couple characters that I didn't recognize, it was still followable.
Yeah.
Did you feel it was more followable, Justin, than the Avengers stuff that we did a few weeks ago?
Well, being really
as the newbie of the group.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is my first foray into Captain America as Captain America, you know, and not part of the Avengers.
Me too, actually.
And so this was a bit of an eye opener for me because this is my first I think it's fair to say this is my first superhero comic because we've talked about Saga and we've talked about some others. And so it was much easier for me to follow because I really only had one character to sort of learn about and understand his perspective. So that was really interesting.
I mean, I've read a lot of Captain America stories as you would guess.
Right.
Yeah, it was kind of the comic that introduced me into comics was, you know, I picked a Captain America up off the stands in 1980 and you know, I was hooked on comics since then. And you know, it's the second part of a 2-part story, but I didn't know that as a 6-year-old.
You know, I have to admit, being a total Captain America, you know, as a Captain America noob, I have to admit, being a total Captain America in his own comic, separate from the Avengers, separate from some other group, but focusing on him as the main character, never read anything like that. I had always assumed that it was just going to be this kind of shit-eating grin, jingoistic bullshit. And that's sort of what I imagined, because I imagined, like, knowing the history of when it came out, what was going on in the world, what he was meant to represent, I always figured it was going to be, you know, just a little too cheesy, a little too America, yay, you know? And after reading this, I feel like an idiot, because it was so much more complex, so much more interesting, and it wasn't like that. There's so much more going on with this character, and I was talking with Joe on the way over here, and he was saying that it's been like that for a long time, you know, even back when I was assuming that it was going to be sort of simple and one-dimensional, that it was never really like that. And that's kind of refreshing to hear, because I kind of assumed that that was what was going to happen, but this is a very interesting character and quickly becoming one of my favorite heroes, because he's so fiercely holds to the tenets of being a hero, being a good guy, always standing up, never giving up. You know, he's such a good person, you know, even more so than the other Boy Scout of the, not Marvel Universe, but of the comics world, often called a Boy Scout, Superman, because Superman most definitely has his dark times. And I would say, from the little bit that I've seen here, that Steve Rogers seems to be sort of the conscience of the Marvel Universe.
Well, he always has been. You know? And then when Stan and Jack brought him back in 64, you know, they always played up to being a man out of time.
Mm-hmm.
you know, of course, when they brought him back, he was only been gone for 20 years. Now it's more like 70 years,
if, right?
You know how Marvel times change. So
when they brought him back the second time, or is it wait? No,
when they brought him back, basically Marvel time is on a sliding scale.
Okay,
so
now it's like he came back in the 80s,
or I mean, even more than that, it'd be like the 2000s when he came.
But he still got, but he still was it frozen, right?
Yeah,
so he still got frozen at the same time.
But I'm saying Marvel has like a sliding time scale where. Say the Fantastic Four got their powers 10 years ago.
Right.
So the whole of the Marvel Universe has happened in the last 10 years, even though there's been probably 10 presidents that they've sat through.
Okay. So, all right. So, because that's interesting because Steve, Captain America, did have stories that took place long, you know, back in, you know, back in the time before he got frozen, right? Like, there's a story that went on.
I mean, he was basically Captain America from 1941 to the end of World War II.
Right.
Frozen.
And so then they're just changing when he gets
when
de-thawed.
When he gets de-thawed, yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah, so basically, yeah, when he got de-thawed, and that's why no one in Marvel ever changed. It's
so called, he can kind of perpetually be current.
Yeah. It's called the illusion of change.
Oh, I see.
A little comic thing. John Foltz actually emailed me this really interesting article about how it can be explained that Franklin Richards of the Fantastic Four is basically keeping everyone the same age because he doesn't want to grow up.
Nah. Oh, nice. Little
interesting.
Scamp.
Yeah. But anyway. We've rambled on enough about Marvel time and all that. Let's get into the book that we read.
Well, I'm glad we went over Marvel time.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
We should do an episode on Marvel time.
How many times I've been called Justin Time? And yes, you know. I would say after reading just this, like if this was my first foray into Captain America, I really think they miscast the movie character because I feel like he's too young in the movie for
the person. To be fair, he does age, you know, 12 years in this book.
Yeah. And he's been unfrozen for like 10 years.
But. Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's the beginning of his story.
Yeah.
How long was he around? Like, how old was he supposed to have been when he got frozen?
Well, say he became Captain America like at 21. So maybe like about 25, you know, 5 years from the war.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Never mind.
Okay. So, you know, all right. So he's supposed to be really young. 100
issues of Captain America comics, I think.
Yeah, somewhere around there. Yeah.
So then, really, the bulk of Captain America's story happens after he gets defrosted.
Yeah.
Because as I read this like John Hamm being Captain America.
I could definitely see that.
Right? Yeah. Like mid to late 30s, early 40s kind of guy. But that's, I mean, we haven't even gotten to the story yet, which is really, really good. So,
all right. So let's get into that. So, John, what's going on with Cap?
Well, so this opens up. I mean, basically, in the last run of Captain America, Ed Brubaker wrote it for almost a decade. So getting a new voice after a decade of stories from someone else was refreshing. So it went from being kind of like an espionage and straight superhero book that Brubaker had done to Remainder, like, flipped it on its head in this first issue. It's like so much happens. It opens up with, you know, a flashback to 1926 where we have like a six-year-old Steve Rogers watching his father smack around his mom because he's become an alcoholic and she's telling him, you need to get out and work so you can feed your family.
Right.
This is during the Depression. Yeah. Obviously, it's in New York.
I freaking loved the flashbacks.
Yes.
Such amount of richness and texture to the character. It made the things that were going on in the current story all the more poignant and all the more powerful.
Yes, it does.
I mean, especially as we get towards the end of the story. Yep. I mean, just excellent. Just excellent.
I love the recurring theme, which is you always stand up.
Yes.
You always stand back up, right?
I mean, basically, after Steve
hope,
Rogers'
there it is, father, it's hope again.
Yeah, Steve Rogers' father literally beats the mom to a pulp. She still stands up and says, I want you to go down there and apply for that job. And young Steve Rogers says, Mom, why didn't you just not stand up? Right, so the beating wouldn't continue and says, you always stand up. You always stand your ground. You know, when it's something's important. And as we find out later on throughout the series.
Oh, here it says, why, sob? Why didn't you just stay down, Mama? Because, and listen close, Stephen, you always stand up.
And then from that flashback scene, it leads into you know, kind of a standard superhero scene, Captain America fighting a terrorist named the Green Skull.
I was gonna be like, so what's?
Is it just always skulls?
I was literally gonna be like, who's the Green Skull guy?
What is it with the skulls?
That was introduced by Remander in there, kind of just as a to get it going kind of thing. Red Skull. I mean, basically,
he ends it in like 10 seconds.
It starts out with him like literally hanging onto his shield as it's wedged into the side of an airplane that's careening towards the Earth.
With a giant green bomb on it.
Right. I love how he lands right next to this cop. And he's like, here, you do this, that, and the other and tell them about this. I'm late for a date. I'm out.
Hold him at gunpoint. I got to go get into my suit. I like the fact that he's got a relationship. You know, that was kind of nice. Yeah.
And to me, it really shows the difference between like Captain America and say like a Spider-Man. Where a Spider-Man would do something like that, the police would be all over questioning him. Whereas it's Captain America, it's like, I'm doing what you say.
Right, because he's Captain freaking America.
Yeah, I am the voice of authority, you know.
Right, the voice of, you know, high moral ground and reason and righteousness and good and justice. And
yeah. You know, going back to the Marvels. Find Captain America. He'll fix this.
Exactly.
So he's 40 in this book. It's his birthday, and he turns 40 on the next, like, it's his birthday when he meets with Sharon. And it, yeah. You know, it's not every day your boyfriend turns 40. So I think I was...
No, your boyfriend turns 90.
Oh, I'm sorry. God, 90. Okay. I turned 40, and therefore I cannot read past my nose. Oh, my God. Kill me now.
So now, for it's those okay. of you that
he
aren't...
He probably was frozen for about, 40, 50 years, so...
Could you imagine waking up after 90, after being frozen for that long? It's the scene from... What's Austin Powers?
Yeah.
It's the pee scene from Austin Powers. Steve Rogers will be out in a minute.
Me turning 40, that's the one thing, you know, that I've started to notice. 5 o'clock in the morning, every morning.
Not me. I sleep in.
No.
You just do it in the bed.
Sleep in.
Oh, that's...
Why do you think I got a water bed? Nobody notices.
Can you guys explain to me who Sharon is in more detail?
Okay, Sharon is... actually the granddaughter of Captain America's love in the 40s.
Nice.
Peggy Carter.
Yeah, Peggy Carter. And when he, just, you know, comics were a little different animal back then. So when he came, was unfrozen, he met her thinking she was Peggy and started a relationship with her and went from there. So
wait, what? He dated the grandma and now he's dating the granddaughter?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to think about that for a few minutes and see how I feel about it. I'm not quite sure. I'm down with that, but I'll think about it.
It's and she was like originally the S.H.I.E.L.D. agent tasked to acclimatize him to, you know, sparkling new future of the 1960s.
It's 80s, 90s, 2000s, you know, whatever. Yeah.
Whatever decade he came alive in or whatever.
Slippery, slidey, marble time.
So he meets her. They're going to some train. They go walking someplace to meet somebody. Or I'm not really sure what the whole.
Well, basically, they're going out on a date, and then a call from S.H.I.E.L.D. comes up.
Oh, that's
saying,
right.
Saying that we found this abandoned train line,
mm-hmm.
and it started up again. You know, so they go to kind of investigate it. You know, thinking it's really nothing. That's why he's still in the suit, and you know, let's check this out before we go on our date. And
it'll only take a minute.
Yeah.
But he does have his shield on under the suit.
Well, don't you always carry your shield with you?
If I were Captain America,
probably. Just keep in mind, you can only leave your shield in your wallet for a couple months before you have to replace the shield.
That was the other thing that I used to love about the old Captain America comics. Like, you know, he'd put his shield on his back and then, you know, put his normal clothes on and no one would notice like this giant... You know, it'd be like walking around with a turtle shell and no one noticing you.
Like with the full shield stars and stripes and everything, and it's just on his back.
Yeah, it's just on his back.
Well, but then, all right then.
But then like a suit jacket over, a coat over, and like nobody notices.
Well, he is a beefy dude.
That's funny. So he gets on the train.
He gets on the train. And
it's not headed where he thinks it's going.
And we are whisked to Dimension X.
Dimension Z,
where everything is different. So basically, the Captain America that we know, being regular standard superhero, is now replaced with this far out science fiction man lost in a new world. Basically Edgar Rice Burroughs, John Carter of Mars.
Yeah, very John Carter.
Yeah, it's so within like half of the issue, everything's completely knocked on its head.
Yeah, I know. I can remember getting a little ways into it and thinking to myself, Whoa. This is a sci-fi story now? What's happening?
No, this is exactly why I was trying, pushing so hard to get you guys to read this one.
Yeah, this was your fault.
This was
Thank
my
you.
Fault. You're welcome.
And it was, basically, he's in Dimension Z, where it's ruled by his old arch-nemesis, Aram Zola, who was a Nazi scientist into cyborgs and genetic engineering and that kind of stuff.
He was the little guy with the glasses in the movie, if anybody's wondering.
Who is now basically a robot with his face on the chest.
Which, can I just say, I don't know why, but like character design-wise, it really bothered me. With his face being down there, it just felt awkward the whole time. And then way later in the story, when this gets into another robot body and his head's in the right place, it was like this sigh of relief washed over me. It's like, finally, he doesn't look goofy. Because I'm thinking Total Recall, the whole stupid movie. The whole stupid book.
And then, so getting to the...
right?
When we get into the back matter of issue one, Rick Remender talks about his inspiration for doing this. And he goes back to the mid-70s Captain America stuff, written and drawn by Jack Kirby. What had happened, little comics history, was while people say Stan Lee was the genesis of Marvel Comics, it's Jack Kirby. Mm-hmm. Stan Lee filled in the dialogue for the stories that Kirby created. And after about a decade of them working together, Kirby got tired of not getting any credit, not getting paid, and left and took his ball to DC. Kirby, after he left Marvel the first time, created probably another 1,000 creations. Stan Lee came back in the early 2000s and created Ravage 2099. So just to go where kind of like, while one gets the credit, the people in the know actually know who did what, you know?
I see.
And then, so Jack, in about 76, he came back to Marvel, where they said, you're writer, you're artist, you're editor, you have your own stuff, do as many books as you want. So he did Captain America, Black Panther, another book called Devil Dinosaur. And it was basically as wild out there, you know, stories and thoughts as you could be. Granted, he wasn't as good as dialogue as Stan Lee, so the comics kind of read a little fucky. The concepts are still amazing, you know. So this is
when, so he's like a big picture guy comes
yeah,
up
with these very
amazing
much so.
Ideas
yeah.
and okay.
Where Stan was able to kind of rein it in a little closer, you know, and make their
He has the Kevin Smith gift for gab.
Yeah.
Gift for dialogue.
And
I love Kevin Smith.
And self-promotion.
Agreed. Yes, and self-promotion. Yeah, Stan Lee is masterful at marketing, no question.
Excelsior indeed.
That's why he's out every weekend selling autographs for $150. A pop and while looking like the guy from Weekend at Bernie's.
Exactly. I've had people that I know go to conventions, get an autograph and a picture with him, and say, I'm not sure whether he was alive or not. Because he didn't interact with me. He didn't, I mean, he just was like ramrod, like Weekend at Bernie's is the best description ever. Comic idea. Like, do a quick short story.
Weekend at Stan.
I would not be shocked if, like, Stan Lee, like, literally died 5 years ago. I mean, I love that he's still alive and out there, but, you know, it's really to the point where it's kind of like, when you see him, it's kind of uncomfortable.
Yeah.
His PA has just been, you know, carting him around on wires for the past couple of years.
Yeah.
No, this is what they've done. I'll tell you what it is. With all of this technology that they've invented in comic books, much like all of the technology that we've pulled from movies and TV shows like Star Trek, for example, your cell phones and all of that, people have actually figured out how to do some of this stuff. And there is a very secret lab 35 floors underneath the headquarters of DC where they are reanimating him every 6 months. Right? So that he can be... It's really just for the cameos and all of the...
Is that really what's going on? I could see
Does
that.
Does the clones degrade after about 6 months?
They degrade. They
so
figured
you,
out how
to
reanimate.
If you get the wrong show, you're just going to get Weekend at Bernie's Stan.
Well, yeah. You'll end up... Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I was
We
thinking.
Should put that picture of Marcus and Stanley up on the...
We should, because it's hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, really, it looks...
Marcus, i.e. the guy that created Mallow Man.
And arts it.
And arts it.
Definitely arts it.
Damn it. Yeah, he has this great picture of him with Stanley, and Stanley just has like hypnosis eyes. It's just, you know, wow. Almost feel like they had to like wipe some drool off his cheek before they took the picture.
I mean, it literally is, you know, if it's an awkward family photo.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
Poor Stanley.
It's like, you know, go visit grandpa at the home, and he's just like,
So anyway, back to Captain America.
So, yeah, I'm sorry. I digress quickly when okay, Stan like versus it. Jack talk arises.
It's a very passionate subject, comic book wise.
When did Jack ever take a break? And is he the guy that did the Kirby vacuums as well?
Fuck. Yes.
That's who that is. That's why the logo is so excellent.
He's actually the little pink guy from the video games.
Those really suck. All right, so Zola is trying to steal the essence out of Captain America. He's trying to steal the super serum, right? That's he's trying to extract.
He's trying
it.
To extract the super serum,
right?
Like many before him,
and create clones.
Yeah,
you know, much.
He wants to make a Captain America army,
but he's using members of this tribe, right?
Well, we don't find that out until the way end.
Well, but there, when you first meet him, there's a baby in a big giant. Like,
yeah, there's a jar baby. Yeah.
Jar baby, right? He's a jar baby. But it's a large jar, so he's not constricted. Don't worry about it. He can move his arms.
I mean, you get the distinct sense that he wanted to imbue into the baby the super serum.
Right. That's what he's trying to do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's actually, it turns
something
out,
happens with the sister that we're introduced to later.
Right. So the story goes, we have a moment where Captain is seemingly defeated. But he sort of mutters, you know, you always stand up. Thanks, Mom. And he breaks out of his binds.
After he's been stabbed in the chest by this crazy needle and injected with something.
Well, he's got something from Zola in him now.
Yeah.
Some Zola essence. Some Zessence. So why is his shield cracked? Because in a lot of the pictures, a lot of the art looks like his shield is cracked to me. Or this is one of the questions I had to ask.
No, I think
it is.
It's cracked.
It is cracked, but I've noticed in a lot of art, in a lot of the art, you don't see it, but it was really subtle, and it was at the end of the Fear Itself arc after the serpent that was causing Ragnarok. He actually shatters the shield.
That's not this story. That's a different story.
Yeah, this is an arc a couple of years ago. So one of the big like unknown Thor bad guys comes and nearly destroys the whole world with the help of the Red Skull's daughter, who collects a bunch of hammers that are like Thor's, but give everybody evil powers.
Oh, that's nice.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, they messed shit up.
Good catch, Justin, and good catch, Joe.
We should do a show on evil powers, because I could think of some good ones.
Oh, I you know, I never even noticed the crack in there till.
Yeah, I totally didn't. I thought it was just an etching or a sketch mark or a shadow.
Yeah, like one of the last panels in Fear Itself is him when, you know, Thor and the dwarves mold the shield back together. They said, "Yeah, we couldn't get rid of this last crack." He said, "You know what? The old girl's earned it."
So it's kind of like the Liberty Bell.
Yeah.
Ooh, very
slick.
Clever.
Very slick. Mm.
I didn't read the Fear Itself story yet. So nice catch.
Neither did I. That was, some of it was pretty good.
I started out reading it, but I really got lost in it. And, you know, I guess that's saying something for a guy that owns a comic book store.
So anyway, Cap escapes, jumps out a window.
Hey, breaks out and smashes through the tube with the baby in it next to him.
Right.
And then disappears.
And then you're introduced to this little girl who runs up to Zola and, you know, and Zola says, look, I'm sorry, but he killed your baby brother, which is, it turns out that these are Zola's children that he's trying to impart this superpower into, or at least the son. So we flip then to the next page and you realize that he didn't kill the child. He took the child.
Yeah, he rescued the child from Zola, assuming that he was just going to use him in his experiments like he has with so many others.
Not realizing, I think, that it was Zola's son, as much as you could be Zola's son or daughter. And so he reveals that he's hidden the baby in his shield and that the baby is now fine.
And all this happens in the first 22 pages.
That's right.
Issue one. So we're off to a good start on this. Basically, the status quo has been turned upside down. Captain America stranded in a dimension.
With a baby.
With a baby.
And it's seriously intense.
Yeah, very intense. Yeah. And the art is amazing throughout all this, incredibly dynamic as always. And yeah, it's just...
I really felt Romita Jr. really was channeling 70s Kirby throughout this.
Yeah.
As a fan of 70s Kirby stuff, I mean, it reminded me so much of Commandy, of, you know, Kirby's Captain America, where it was all these great big set pieces, you know, that can exist and would cost hundreds of millions of dollars if you try to, you know, shoot this movie. There was even like so many Kirby designs, like the way that Jet Black looks at the end. I'm like, that's a Kirby drawing. That's a Kirby creation. And then
she almost has a bit of an Egyptian look to her a little bit, yeah, you know?
Yeah. Her with her helmet being kind of the way it is. Very interesting. Yeah.
Black and kind of a black and gold. But.
So it was very cool. Rick Remender going back to the 70s Kirby Captain America stuff and pulling that out. I mean, that was just right before I got into Captain America as a kid, you know, cause that was like 75. So I was about 3 when it was coming out, but I've read, you know, some of the trade paperbacks they've released of that stuff. And, you know, it's some wild out there stuff, you know, not, and then, you know, when I got into Captain America, it's, you know, basically more your standard superhero fare. All right. So then that leads us into issue 2, where the first page we see a black page that says
one year later.
Which is white. That part's white.
Yeah. There's a lot of time that passes in these 10 issues. I mean, that we do one jump here, and then we do a fat jump later.
Yeah. He's stranded for a while.
Yeah, a long time.
One year later in Marvel Times, like 400 issues.
Yeah, that's true. That's a long
But it time. Is Dimension Z, and time's moving kind of screwy, so it might work.
Now, have we been to Dimension Z, if we've been long-time fans?
Not that I know. I think this is all brand new.
So the first time we've ever been to Dimension Z, because it's Dimension Zola?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was hoping our pal John Foltz would sit in on this, because he absolutely raved about this book for the last 10 months to me, like how great it is. But
we'll have to record a podcast on a day that he doesn't have to teach in the morning.
Yeah.
It's the only way that's going to happen, I think.
Students.
Teachers.
Yeah, so we start out at school in the morning.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And I'm still here.
Dedication.
And so, that will be the tag on Twitter next week.
Bring it, Foltz.
Hashtag bring it, Foltz.
So then after the year has passed by, it zooms in again on another amazing shot of Cap and the young boy who has grown a substantial amount in 1 year.
He's about 6 or 8 years old.
Yeah. Here, now, again, this is a, you know, crazy Zola mutant baby. So who knows what the actual timeline of growth is, and, you know, could be accelerated for a while and then slow down. You never know. But, you know, I figure considering that the baby came out of a test tube in Zola's lab, I just kind of went with it, you know, because at first it was kind of like, whoa, 1 year, that kid's gotten big. But then I thought, nah, whatever. Test tube kid. Who knows what's really going on?
Yeah.
So they're up on the top of this mountain, sitting in front of a fire, talking.
Surviving, yeah.
Cap is cooking in his shield, which I thought was really cool. Multi-purpose shield.
Has all the beautiful watercolors in the background.
Yeah, the art is really, it's really pretty. But this is where I nitpick about the art style, in that we find out that the boy's name is, he names him Ian. And I find that Ian, his likeness is very feminine in some of the pictures.
Oh, a lot of the time. And it's not just because he has long hair, because Cap has long hair too.
Right.
But even the way Ian is sitting on the rock in the first scene, his knees are squeezed together, his toes are pointed. It's a feminine body language.
Yeah.
On a real regular basis, Ian comes across as very feminine. And it's not that Ian's an effeminate boy. It's that the way that he's drawn, he looks feminine.
And there's a picture on, I don't know what page this is.
Like page 3.
Page 3 or 4, right?
Of issue 2, yeah.
And they're basically talking about, you know, Ian hasn't fed for days. I could find something. The desert is teeming with strange life. But the way that Ian looks, it's not archy. There's an old comic where the eyes were not drawn in.
Little Orphan Annie.
It looks a little Orphan Annie. And that's just the stuff that bothered me art-wise. So that's my nitpicking right there. That's about it. now that I am a Captain Extraordinaire critique of sick comics. You know, on the flip side of that, Cap's armor is frigging amazing. The way that there's so much detail in his armor and the scaling and stuff. And, you know, I thought it was really cool that they give him sort of a beard goatee and long hair. And
yeah,
I,
that's never it's cool anything to I ever see thought. Cap haggard looking.
Yeah, I never thought I would see that.
Yeah, it's really neat. And so, you know, here we are on the top of this mountain with the two of them cooking, well, cooking a tiny amount of soup in his shield and just struggling to survive. And at this point, a year later, they haven't really figured out how to live on this planet. They've come across some predators. They've come across some things that looked like it was going to be okay and ended up not being okay. They've figured out how to rough it a little bit, but they haven't gotten to a place where they've learned how to survive on this world and thrive.
Yeah, he can't tell direction, time. There's the stars are different. There's too right. many
There's
of them.
There's no sense of map. There's no sense of where they are. They haven't found civilization, Zola, or otherwise.
And he's still injured.
And, yeah, exactly. Still messed up.
From having his chest stabbed. So I have to ask another question. What is the story behind the bullet marked diligence?
I think in issue one, you see where Sharon gave him a...
Was that the gift?
A gift. So
I'll have to think about what that means for me. So, yeah, interesting. I think that was
where he got him from.
Why diligence? Why a bullet, one bullet with the word diligence on it? I'll have to think about that. It's interesting.
And that's definitely highlighted several times in the comic. You know, it comes up a couple times in the box. And then in the end, he ends up, you know, grabbing and looking at it in a time of desperation and struggle. So, I mean, it's significant to him.
Get the sense that, yes. And the other thing that I really enjoyed about this is you start to see Cap sort of very much taking on a role. He's becoming a father.
Yeah, a lot of this has a lot to do with the father-son relationship, especially Cap's relationship with his father, which was not good, and how much of his life he spent running away from becoming anything like his father. And in a way, that became its own prison because he was trying to avoid all of that, that he shut out some aspects of his life because he was trying to never allow himself to become anything like his father.
I mean, his father was weak and, you know, he killed himself to get away from, you know, the situation he was in, leaving behind wife and a young child to fend for themselves and the depression. And
well, it's beautiful because they make the allegory back and forth between his father in the depression and then Cap in Dimension Z and showing how basically his father, who ended up committing suicide in the struggle of the depression, who basically started out as a good man. Everybody that knew him, his mother even, who he beat on a regular basis, and the other people that knew Cap's father, said that he was a good man, but that he allowed struggle and the times that he was in to twist him and turn him into something else, take that away from him. And that's the beautiful kind of comparison between Cap's dad and Cap on, in this horrible new place.
Right.
Is because in Dimension Z, it's so awful that it's like his own depression. It's his own, you know, it's his own version of that. And he's put in a position where he's responsible for a young person. He basically is thrust into a fathership role and then struggles to try and survive in an unbelievably adverse environment and, you know, is tempted to, you know, or has the, I guess, the opportunity to be tempted to, you know, let it change him. But he still remains Cap. He still remains himself through it all and doesn't give up and doesn't ever forget that he will always stand up and he will always stand for the weak and support people and do the right thing. And that's, I think, you know, a big part of what this is all about. And that's what's so cool about going back and forth between the 20s flashback and, you know, and the Dimension Z stuff is that even though it's some crazy alien world with mutants and monsters and all this insanity, it's still very much the same story as just a family struggling in the 20s.
Just pointing out that the ideals of standing up for yourself and being diligent is timeless.
Absolutely.
Timeless, dimensionless. And
dimensionless. Yes.
I absolutely love this whole issue too. Basically, after the flashback part, how crazy sci-fi otherworld it is.
Yeah.
It's, you know, Captain America leading Ian through this Sandstorm.
It has a very Dune feel. Yeah. In this particular section. You know, there's even concern about making noise with your feet walking around and giant things exploding out of the ground. I mean, it very Dune-like in this section.
If you walk without rhythm, you won't attract the worm.
That's right.
I can't walk without rhythm. Can't do it, dude. I'm a drummer.
Luckily, I have no rhythm, so...
Safe.
I would be safe.
Safe on Arrakis.
So then they're trying to survive in this sandstorm, and then a couple of mutants on hover bike things come blasting over them.
That panel is harking back. I mean, that is so something you'd find in like a Jack Kirby Commandy story.
Yeah.
You know, just, you know, 45 years later.
I love the basic language skills of these dudes. Frog sweep, eat now, murder, kill, drill, kill, murder, slice, go.
They have a vocabulary of like 30 words.
They don't have any of. They just like, yeah.
It's kind of like being in a mosh pit.
Somewhat, yes.
Cap actually makes an observation about how a weak mind or a weak person surrounds himself with weak minds or something like that.
Yeah, later on about
Zola. Yeah, making an observation about how Zola, in theory, is perfectly capable of creating incredibly intelligent creatures to work with him, but he chooses to create things that are incredibly unintelligent and very violent to surround himself with so that he can be their god. He fancies himself a god in this world.
Right.
Yeah.
Makes it easier to manipulate them, but also he gets what he needs out of them, which is complete and utter brutality. So he doesn't need them to have brains. He needs them to just go that direction, kill everything in your path, and don't think about the consequences of you potentially getting hurt. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So these guys are these big kind of... It's basically a head with teeth, and then the body is somewhat scaly and black. It's almost if you took an alien's body, took the long sort of... head off, slapped a big pair of teeth on it, and that's kind of what you get without a tail, and that's what they kind of look like.
Yeah.
But they're incredibly dumb, and they're very, well, they're not dumb, they're simple, but they're very vicious, brutal. And violent, vicious and violent.
So in the middle of their fight, he ends up being able to save himself by calling up this giant monster from under the ground to munch on one of them.
Right, which he basically, you know, he's in a sandstorm, and then he's like, oh man, now the green tentacles coming out of the ground. Like, you see these little green weeds, and you think, oh, it looks like grass. And it's like, if you kick one of those, it just, this thing, this massive, you know,
again, beast. Sort of an allusion to Dune, to me.
They can wield some sort of lightning, these enemies, these things.
Well, they definitely have some pretty high technology, even if all they can say is, eat, hunger, murder, / kill, drip, blood, yum, yum. Mm. Om, nom, nom.
So he defeats them by using the environment, which he's learned enough. And you can tell that in that time, they've learned some hard truths. But then they're captured by, I believe it's the Frox.
The Frox.
Which is a native, you know,
native people.
Yeah, it's the native people. And this kind of harkens back almost a little bit to me. There was that the last movie that Mel Gibson did with the Aztecs. Was it the Aztecs?
Oh, Apocalyptica.
Apocalyptic, right? So, Apocalypto, right? Wasn't it?
Apocalyptica, I think.
I think it was Apocalypto.
I think it was Apocalyptico.
Well, whatever.
Anyway.
It's a mix of both.
A very, very well-chosen name.
Yeah. It was... And only because they're the native, you know, they're native to Dimension Z, but yet they're really kind of cast in this light as slaves. He's really trying to get them. His intention is to wipe them out. Zola's intention is to wipe them out. And interestingly enough, they capture Cap and Ian thinking that they're one of Zola's minions and, you know. One of the guards is like, no. Like, right as they're about to die, the head Frox is going to kill them. One of the other Frox comes up and says, no, they were actually fighting. They saved us. They fought against the Zola minions. And Cap, all along this time, he's got this universal translator on his arm that he's trying to activate. And he finally gets activated.
How convenient. Thank you, Tony Stark.
Yes.
Was it Stark that gave him that to him?
It was Pym, but yeah. One of the big
brains.
So you have this oppressive Zola, but then even internally in their own tribe, they've got an oppressive leader who is basically telling them, you know, we're going to stand up to this guy. We're just, you know, you can't even stand up to me, basically. And so Cap stands up and causes a bunch of problems, but he stands up nonetheless. And that's kind of how we end two and move on to three is they've been captured.
Mm-hmm.
So in three, they kind of become sort of
frogs.
Yeah, a little bit. Well, it kind of goes back to a flashback to 1929.
It's just a little more character development on who Zola is.
Right. It gives you a little
and
bit
how
of
much
that.
A little bit of bastard Zola. He is.
And about the rough life that Steve Rogers had.
Right.
You know, being beat up by bullies and stuff. And
how he was still...
Would still stand up.
And he would go, because this particular flashback has him going to the aid of somebody else who's getting mistreated. And he ends up getting his ass kicked.
Well, that was in two, actually. That was the beginning of two.
Yeah.
So in three. So here's another question for you. Zola's head can extend outside of his body a little bit. Like he has this ability to sort of press out, which I thought was kind of weird. Kind of weird.
Kind of cool.
Kind of cool, I guess.
Like this. It seems really unclear, like what state of being he is.
I dug it a lot.
I liked it.
I liked it.
So, and this is also the introduction, really, sort of a more solidified introduction of the daughter of Zola, who is, what was her name?
Jet Black. Like her heart. That's from the comic, guys.
And she's just a cute little, you know, like a little 11-year-old or something like that. Again,
who's a complete badass.
Yeah, she is. She's
very much hit girl.
She is a little bit of
a little hit girl, yeah.
But then again, my complaint about Ian's drawing in some of this, or the drawing of Ian, is that sometimes Ian is a little bit hit girl. So,
yes,
you know, but not blonde.
Definitely.
So there's sort of this struggle with Cap kind of trying to create this uprising in the Frocks, because he sees sort of this, you guys are always going to be in this position. You're never going to get anywhere unless you stand up for yourselves. Again, stand up. But the main leader, I think, is he's sort of very much a little mini Zola, where he's like...
He's super oppressive, totally a dictator.
Yeah.
Like, no, I've got a good thing here. You are not going to screw this up.
Right. And so, of course, you know, Cap coming in and being like, no, let's, you know, this is wrong. You shouldn't be a dictator. It's like, you know, the Nazis all over again. You know, he's like, I don't want to you should stand up for yourself. You know, all it takes is one person to stand up and against tyranny, and others will follow. And in response to that, the big bad boss of the Frocks, he comes down and kills his friend, starts attacking Cap.
Right.
And sure enough, Cap, you know, barely manages to kick his ass.
Right. This is what you get for standing up.
Right, exactly. But he ends up, Cap, of course, ends up beating him. So.
And then we're introduced to Cap as a painter, which I didn't know. He's, you know, sort of portrayed as a very, very good artist, which he's painting all over the place. And it's kind of interesting. He's very sort of, if you think about it, it's really cave painting, right? Which is, you know, a great thing.
That's actually always been one of the Cap subplots, is that he's an artist.
Oh, is that right? Okay, yeah. Good to know. And then it does flashback, I apologize, it does flashback to Cap going to stand up.
Told
you so. Me. You're doing this in episode two. It flashes back to Cap going to sort of help one of his buddies who's getting the crap beat out of him by these older boys. And Cap at this time has also met sort of this cute little girl that sees him drawing her or something like that. And then she, of course, sort of chooses the jerk out of the group that beats him and the other kid up, which is kind of like getting, right. It's like double, you know, it's like,
yeah, it's
double
like it's
whammy.
Just kicking me when I'm down. Why don't you?
And they kind of, like I said, they make their life with the Frocks, and they, you know, they become part of the sort of the tribe. And
well,
then,
things don't really go smoothly with the Frocks until after Cap has his throwdown with the head guy.
True. This
and
true.
At the end of that issue, we get a relatively big reveal in this great full-page spread. One page, but it's still the whole entire page, no panels. Where Cap rips his shirt open, looks down at his chest that is just trashed, and he sees Zola. It's just there in his chest, the face.
Zola face.
You know, right. And we're like, what's happening? And Zola says... You must protect your Zola, Herr Rogers. He is your new closest friend.
This was a bit confusing for me, honestly, because I wasn't sure exactly what was going on yet, but I think they tidied it up.
Well, I think you were supposed to be confused.
You were supposed to be like, WTF, mate, at the end of that
issue.
No,
I have to wait for a month to find out what happened.
Oh, I need my facts.
I'll just click the next button.
You know, John Foltz would... You got to read it. You got to read it. The big cliffhanger.
Oh, yeah, man.
I'll read it when it gets to the end of the story arc.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I'll watch the series when I can see the episodes right after each other.
Mm-hmm.
No, thank you. So then
we skip to 11 years later.
Yeah, if 1 year later wasn't enough of a shock. Because, you know, I think that we all perpetually expect that when somebody gets sucked into some different universe or tossed onto another planet, that they're there for a while and then they come back and you never really quite cross the year mark.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's like a year later, I'm like, oh, it's like that, is it? And then the next issue, 11 years later, oh, it's like that, is it? Oh, so
It's a bit Inception-ish here, because not only is he a man out of time, now he's a man out of time who's a man out of time.
Well, and he actually makes an observation that he has spent more time in this world than he has in our world.
That's right.
After he'd been unfrozen. Like, he'd only been unfrozen for a short time in comparison to the 12 plus years he spent here.
Yeah.
Which is kind of crazy. It's like suddenly this is more home than home.
So I think this is where he's really taken on the role of a father full swing in this book, is starting, you know, he's training Ian. He's teaching him how to use the shield. He's teaching him how to hunt. You can see that in that 11 years, not only have they survived, they've thrived a little bit. They've gotten good at living in this environment. Mm-hmm. They understand
not completely
it.
Weak anymore. They know how to find food.
He's a little haggard, but you get that that's from, you know.
And I think that his suit looks even cooler when it's patched up after being trashed.
Oh, yeah.
That
yeah.
looks awesome. Sort of very Mad Max-like, where it's, you know, what was once a good, strong armor is now trashed and cobbled together with string and tape and yarn. It's just, it's cool looking. So he's off, he's teaching Ian how to hunt.
Hunt, right, with the shield and giving him tips and stuff. And I suppose one of my other little nitpicks is they sort of introduce guns at this point a little more clearly, and I thought that the guns were a little bit oddly drawn.
Well, they're Dimension Z guns.
Yeah,
I know. You just took the words right out of my mouth, John. I was going to say.
I know, but, you know.
Nothing.
I think I like the Dimension X guns better.
I mean, they're not Rob Liefeld guns, at least.
Well, I don't even know what that means, but I know what it means. They're probably Liefeld guns. I know what Liefeld.
Like twice the size of your body.
They have giant chests. It doesn't have to make sense. You can't, it's Liefeld.
You can't have it one way or the other, right? Here we are raving. Right before the podcast, we were talking about movies that you can watch no matter what. So anytime Road Warrior comes on, or anytime, no matter what format, like even if I have to watch commercials, I'll sit and watch Road Warrior. Even if there's other stuff on that doesn't have commercials, I'll sit and watch Road Warrior. Or for me, another one is The Fifth Element. I don't know why I love The Fifth Element so much, but Mila Jovovich. I love The Fifth Element. I can sit and watch that movie over and over and over and over again. And then the other, lastly, is Starship Troopers. But the guns in Starship Troopers are, like, massive. It's like they took a regular gun and just they blew it up to four times its normal size. So you can't complain about the guns.
Okay, but imagine the Starship Trooper guns times, like, 10.
Oh, okay. Well, okay. I give it that. Yeah. It's like the German giant train cannon. That's what they're carrying around. You know,
sure.
They can, like, launch a Volkswagen Beetle, like, 2,500 miles.
So here they are 11 years later. And it seems like they've been able to be comfortable with the Frocks. They've definitely become important to them. They're out hunting for the tribe, right? And what we find out is the Zola virus, which is why his chest is a giant big Zola face, is the Zola virus is trying to take over his body to, you know, completely own Captain America, as, you know, and then obviously he would have Cap. He would have him completely, and he could do experiments on him and stuff. So that was, I guess, his plan from the get-go. And so basically it introduces another layer of Captain's strength in adversity, that he's literally, his body is trying to take over and change his moral compass. And he's fighting that as well.
Right.
So again comes the theme of standing up against oppression, not letting your circumstances change who you are, not becoming bitter and dark and taking the easy way, but it's taking the high road and standing tall. Like, that continues to be another element, even with this this piece here, with the Zola face chest thing, virus thing, and the chest. It's weird looking. I don't like the face and the chest. It bothers me. I don't know why.
It's supposed to be disconcerting.
It is. It's disconcerting. Yeah. It's like, why is that there?
But I mean, it's the beauty of it. You know, like, you're used to seeing, you know, like a head with the face, you know, on top of your shoulders. But then when it's in the chest, you know, you're naturally drawn there.
It feels really wrong.
You know what's hilarious about watching you explain that? is that you are wearing the Eternia shirt and you have a skull popping out of your chest.
Out of your chest, yeah.
I do want to say that at this point, it's very clear to Captain, to Cap and Ian that Ian is not Cap's son.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And that makes him even more impressive as this father figure, because not only is he raising somebody else's son and keeping him alive, it's his enemy's son, and he knows this. Mm-hmm. So who is Mary? There's this little... So
Mary was Zola's wife.
And he's got her in this giant test tube, and it turns out that...
So well, she tried to leave. She tried to leave him.
Her DNA.
And so he's cloned her.
He's cloned her many times, you know.
Okay, I gotcha.
You know, from genetic experiments.
Right.
Yeah.
This is how they do Stan Lee.
it's the Norman Osborn method for girlfriends and or wives.
I don't know who Norman Osborn is, but
well, in one of our first podcasts in the Geek Life, we did this whole thing. We were talking about Norman Osborn, and Joe was saying, "It's like, yeah, man, Norman needs a girlfriend. Just pops one out of the cooler."
Pretty much. Yeah, he cloned Gwen Stacy after he killed her.
Okay.
And.
Oh, he's not a real... This is a comic book character.
Yeah. The Green Goblin.
The Green Goblin.
Okay. Okay. One of the other things that's really interesting is not only is Zola's essence or Zola the virus, the Zola virus, trying to take over his moral compass, but he communicates with Cap a lot of the time.
Oh, yeah.
He's
constantly
beating
trying
him, just
to,
beating
yeah.
him morally.
It's yeah. the kind of the physical devil on your shoulder.
Yeah. But in your chest. Mm-hmm. Then we flash back to his mother dying. Steve Rogers' mother. He sees his mother sort of... And he's trying to take care of her and... Mm-hmm. He ends up, you know, as part of the whole process of trying to come up with money for rent, to come up with money for medicine, he makes kind of a moral decision at a very young age where, you know, to do something wrong or to help something happen, which he later goes back and...
Yeah, he reconciles.
His mother, you know. I love the fact that his mother is such a strong character.
Even as she's dying, right. Can't afford the rent, really on death's door, he says, "Don't worry, Mom, I'll do anything I have to help you and to make it work." And she looks at him and she says, "Don't do anything. Do not change who you are. Don't let your circumstances mess with your moral compass."
Let me just say that reading this, I am so glad that we live in the time we live in now. And
right?
Yeah. I know.
Oh, it's
funny because I was thinking about something earlier that I, you know, if there had been the internet during the, you know, the time where his father had killed himself, I was thinking to myself, he would have seen the It Gets Better video on YouTube and he wouldn't have killed himself.
I haven't seen that. I have to watch that.
It came out after, I think there was...
It's about bullying and homophobic.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
And it's a bunch of Apple employees basically created this video and it just blew up. And it basically, everybody's like, "Look, It Gets Better. Make it through the next day." Because the percentage of teens who are gay who commit suicide is pretty high, especially after they're bullied in school. And so there was a particular case that came out a couple of years ago that sort of impacted the gay community. And that's where this came from. And I don't know that Apple put it out, but a bunch of Apple employees show up in it, as well as a bunch of celebrities and a bunch of like Dan Savage, you know, and every one of their messages, look, right now, you know, you're 15, you don't have control of your own life. You live under your parents' home. You have to follow their rules, but listen, it gets better. It gets better. It gets better. And it's a really moving video because you could substitute gay for anything, right? Like me, I was always heavy as a kid. It gets better, you know. Once you have control of things, you just get through the next day. Like, get through the next day. It's not going to be this bad forever. This too shall pass. So anyway, cheesily, if his father had seen that, maybe he would have. if there was the interwebs in the 20s,
right? Or if there was, "Don't worry, be happy."
Bobby McFerrin, yeah, saving lives throughout the decades.
So then issue 5 comes in, and Miss Jet Black is leading the assault on the Frocks because Zola's just done with this. It's time to move his...
Well, as a matter of fact, they find the old leader of the Frocks.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And then bring him to Zola's compound and figure out from him where his tribe was hiding, because Zola is surprised that there's still a Frocks tribe because he had on purpose destroyed them all. But this particular tribe is living in a cave off of fish and things like that. And so they're not, you know, out there readily available for Zola to come and massacre. And so this guy wandering around that Steve basically sent into exile after whooping his ass and deposing him was essentially the key for Zola to find the Frocks colony.
Mm-hmm.
So as they come back from fishing, in the air with a shield, they come upon, they realize that...
Yeah, that makes sense.
It's exactly what happened. Don't judge me.
No, it's exactly what happened.
Dimension Z logic. So sure enough, they come back and the Frocks are being attacked. And so they immediately jump in to try and fight back. And this is hard because Cap, when they're out hunting, he finds an outpost, a mutant outpost. Are they calling it muti? Is that what?
Yeah. Mutate.
Anyway. He finds a mutant outpost as they're hunting and kicks a couple mutant asses and then sees one of their little hover bikes and it has an intact map. And he's like, this is what I've been looking for. This is the key to everything. I'm trying. Now I have the map. I can find out how to get back to the portal to get me back home. You know, the kid's like, well, what do you mean home? This is my home. And, you know, what are you talking about? And so the kid convinces him to go back to the Frox people. And thank God, because they're being attacked by Zola. And so instead of selfishly taking the kid, taking Ian and Cap just running off and escaping back to Earth, they stay and help the Frox people because they've harbored them and they've become friends over these long years. And that's when we meet Jet Black, like her heart.
And now she's all grown up and not a little girl.
This epic cheesery right there. Just saying.
Yep. And then we're also introduced to the giant Captain America clones that are pretty cool as well.
And the Captain Zolandias.
Yeah, the Zolandians. Let's say Zolandias. Whatever. Zolandia, probably. Yeah.
They're goofy, evil clones of Captain America.
Yeah, who apparently have his memories, too, and are trying to tell him terrible things, and you killed your mother, and, you know, they never really rectify any of that, and I get the feeling that they're just trying to mess with him.
Yeah, I mean, it's their memories as corrupted by Zola.
Right.
I mean, this story is really fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, from reading a lot of Captain America stories, it was like no other Captain America story I'd ever read before.
Really?
Yeah.
But with that insanely strong character of Captain America.
And... you know, the sci-fi aspects of it were amazing. I thought Romita knocked it out of the park.
Oh, yeah.
His best Kirby work. If this really does, you know, end up being his swan song at Marvel after almost 40 years of being there.
So be it.
It's a great way to go out. And, you know, I really recommend this. You know, the hardcover, the first 5 issues is out right now. Next month, I think the 6 through 10 will come out to complete the story. It's, you know, I definitely recommend, you know, everyone checking this out.
Yeah, what, issue 11 at the time of this recording? It came out today.
Issue 11 came out today, which was 9/11. How, you know,
serendipitous.
Apropos that we're talking about Captain America on 9/11.
True.
Hmm. 1 through 5 is like the setup of the world in the building, and we've taken the better part of our hour discussing it. And 6 through 10 is very fast. I mean, it's basically Captain America duking out with Zola, but there's many twists and turns throughout that I think would be very spoilerific if we discussed.
Yeah, I don't think that we need to go. I mean, suffice it to say, he eventually makes it back home, and there's a lot that happens in between.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't want to give away any of that because it's worth reading.
Yeah, and the epilogue on issue 10 had me, like, smiling out loud.
Yeah, you know? Smiling right directly
out loud. Yes, right out loud.
Yes.
Beaming.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was awesome. That you finish that out and you're just
justifying.
Like, yes. Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
And imagine we had like me and John Folds, who are the only guys reading this monthly.
Of our group, our little group,
Had to wait, you know, from that big reveal at the end of issue 8, you know, the 2 months to get to that epilogue at the end of 10.
I mean, for me,
it was heavy.
And the day that it took me to get from 8 to 10, I was like, you know, so much so.
Right. That's a big.
Yeah, there's some heavy stuff that happens in that stretch from 6 to 10.
So, like I said, issues 1 through 5 are available hardcover right now. It, you know, come to the shop when you pick them up. If you're listening out in Amazon world, you can definitely order it there.
Mm-hmm.
And then 6 through 10, I believe, comes out next month. And hopefully, I'm hoping Marvel does the thing like they do and collect 1 through 10 in one giant hardcover.
Because that would be great, because this is, I mean, it is a complete thought, this whole story. 1 through 5 is not a complete thought. It's just not. It's, you're going to want 1 through 10. This feels like a whole story from beginning to end, It can feel like you could, I could stop right here. Not that I'm gonna, but I could stop right here and feel complete about this. There's nothing that's left hanging. There's no loose ends. There's everything is tied very clean and simple and slick at the end. And you feel good about it. And I would love to see, I mean, I'm just glad we got to read it one through 10 all in a row. I'm not happy for you, Joe. It must have been hard reading it piece by piece. So I think that it's going to be great. I really hope they do that because that would be awesome.
And thank you for being on me to read it all these months. And all right. I'm glad that we finally
I am too.
Me three.
Because I've been, you know, just like we're trying to do tonight, I've been trying to tell you about it and not give away all the huge, like, spoiler plot points.
I think we did a good job of not ruining it because it really is 6 through 10 that are... There's some amazing things that happen.
Yeah, and 6 through 10 is epic.
You're going to have some moments where you're like, oh, no way, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Before that, it's really more... It's really
it's
building
the stage. It's world
yeah,
building.
Yeah, but mean, it's done. It's, there's a nut. There's
it's
a lot of
dimension
better.
Building.
It is.
Sorry.
Right. There's some good stuff.
Yeah.
So, as an introduction to Captain America outside of the Avengers, I don't know if there would be a more perfect place to start. Yeah.
I think it really nailed it, and it's pretty much the antithesis of our Avengers discussion where. You were completely lost.
Yeah.
Because it takes the character that you kind of sort of know from pop culture, media, and movies and stuff, and pulls him out of anything that you could easily get lost in, all these characters and all this history in the normal world, pulls him out of that, and then does a character study. I mean, that's what this is. It's a character study.
Yeah.
It studies his history, his origins with his family. I mean, not origins isn't super origins, but origins is like... You know, as a little kid growing up and his motivations and his family. And it digs into who he is separate from being a superhero, but like who he is as a person. And I feel like I have a very strong understanding of who Captain America is as a person. Mm-hmm. And that I think that'll support me moving forward reading anything else with Captain America. I feel like I'm going to have a much more robust understanding of why he does what he does and
well,
who he is.
You'll care about him.
Yeah, yeah.
More. He's a more interesting, he's less black and white and more, you know, there's more filled in.
I always thought he was red, white, and blue.
Oh. All right. So I would say as we're leaving, as we're ending this phenomenal episode, you're such a goober.
I can't stop laughing. I'm sorry.
It's okay. If you do take a time to read this, you know, comment back on the website and let us know what you think of the whole diligence on the bullet.
Yeah, don't forget where, you know, it below the show notes, you can always come log in on with your Facebook, Twitter, or Discuss account and, you know, send us your 2 cents. And if you so desire, you can send us an email on the form.
Or you can just tweet John over at Waterfront Comics.
Yeah, at Waterfront Comic. Not comics, but comic.
Ah.
When it get the S.
Yeah, it was too long. But yeah, you know, interact with us, you guys. Tell us what you think about what we say. You know, if you think that we're a bunch of idiots, then say so. And, you know, who knows?
Maybe except for me.
Yeah, we'll find you. Find your house. And
no. Now that's only on bad Yelp reviews.
Yeah, right?
I got one that's Yelp against review the rules. That made me so angry one time that like I literally tracked down who this person was.
Did you really? Was it from like one of those awful angry moms who comes in and it's just a awful, flaming, terrible person? You post stuff on... So for those of you that don't know, John Harder, on his Facebook account, will post crazy shit that happens in the store. And the funny thing is... It happens a lot. Like, very regularly, I don't know how many posts I've read over the past month or two that say, you'll never guess what just happened, or somebody just walked into the store and, or this crazy bitch. It's like, man, there's some crazy stuff that happens. People come
in. They're deserved, though. I mean, it's not like you're just berating your customers.
Oh, yeah,
you're the nicest guy I know. Don't get us wrong.
No, I mean, in a day, you see so many people, but inevitably, there's going to be some person who's just... Tweaked.
Oh, yeah.
My favorite story was someone once bought a comic because he liked the color green and the cover was green.
That's pretty great. That's pretty great.
Next week, we will be talking about something most people probably have never heard of, a little book called Star Wars.
Star Wars.
So like there's a lot of Star Wars comics. Which one are we talking about?
It is almost impenetrable. The amount of Star Wars comics there are.
So which one have you chosen?
Luckily, in the last year, Dark Horse has gone back to the well of the ones that people really know the most. So we're going to be reviewing Star Wars. It's just Star Wars, by written by Brian Wood, which is set between the end of A New Hope and the beginning of Empire Strikes Back.
Nice.
Ooh.
So the first story arc, because the first trade actually comes out next week on the 18th. So we're going to be reviewing that. That's issues 1 through 6 of that book. And as a little added bonus, last week there was a Dark Horse launched a new miniseries, 8-part, called The Star Wars, where it is George Lucas's original rough draft, which is completely, utterly different.
Yeah, it's than really any freaking Star cool.
Wars we've Biggs ever... Darklighter, really? The main character.
There is an Anakin Skywalker, as well as a Darth Vader character, as well as a Luke Skywalker character, which none of them resemble any that we've seen.
Yeah, they're all very different. It's really interesting. I enjoyed the hell out of it and immediately lent it to a friend.
Justin's probably one of the biggest Star Wars fans I know.
So yeah, this one's like Star
like
Wars.
Right really? In his wheelhouse.
Yeah. Well, I love Star Wars. Oh, yeah.
Oh, man, we need to talk.
Dude, well, why do you think I have... I have a 6-foot, I have an original 1975 Star Wars trifold. I walked into a store in LA and it was on the wall. And I just literally, the first words out of my mouth were, how much? And when she told me, I didn't care. I bought it. And then I went home and I go home and I go home and I'm like, I go, babe. And she's like, yeah. She goes, I was like, I was really bad. And she's like, what do you mean? You know, I'm sure the first thing she thought of was like bad. I was like, I spent $1,100 at a poster store. And she was like, what? I was like, I spent $1,100 at a poster store. So I bought a whole bunch of posters, but that poster, it's linen backed. It's, you've never seen it. It's beautiful.
Yeah,
it's the original 1975. Like, you know. Had to have it. I'm a Star Wars fan. I was Luke Skywalker when I was like 7 years old for Halloween. My stepmom made me a little, she ripped up a white sheet, made me Luke Skywalker, made my sister Princess Leia. I mean, I love the first three.
Yeah, I'm a huge Star Wars fan. Yeah. I grew up making movies about Star Wars.
I think that's great. I had all the toys. I had all the Star Wars. I went to Gemco and put the AT-AT, you know, the Imperial Walker on. I'd put it on layaway I would mow the lawns.
I did the same thing for the snowspeeder. I saved my allowance for like 3 months to buy the snowspeeder when it came out.
And I had this buddy of mine. He had every freaking Star Wars toy. He had everything.
I was that kid.
I don't know how, I'm like, you know, and it's funny because when I grew up, like Star Wars figures, like $3. And I remember like my grandma we'd be at like a Kmart or we didn't have Walmart back then, but we'd be like a Kmart or Montgomery Ward's or whatever. And they'd have the Star Wars section and I'd be like, oh, I don't have this one. Like, grandma, can I get this? Can I get this? She'd be like, no, it's too expensive, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, now I'm like $3?
But $3 then was probably like, I don't know, 12 now.
I don't know if I feel that way though. It was like 10 bucks 20 years. I mean, and my kids were like, oh, dad, we want another pack of Pokemon cards. And I was like, $3, okay, whoop-de-doo, get three of them, you know? I mean, I guess it's the economy of scale, right? It's more expensive now. Like, you go back to, like, when I went to 7-Eleven when I was a kid, you could get a candy bar for 25 cents. And I used to remember my mom
and
going...
And a comic for 25 cents.
Yeah, and I remember my mom going, well, when I was a kid, you know, candy bars were 5 cents. And I'm like, and you're like, shut up. But now candy bars are like $1.70 for, like, a Snickers. I'm like, what the hell is this? It's the same. It's probably smaller.
Yeah, even anyway. I would call him BS.
So long story short,
I like Star Wars.
Is amazing.
I like Star Wars.
And come back next week and check it out.
All right.
Unless you're a Star Trek fan, in which case...
Star Trek. Still come back.
Star Trek.
All right,
Star
Trek's
cool, too. The last two are exceptional.
You can like them both.
Yes.
But I like Star Trek.
Well, thanks for listening. We'll see you guys next week.
Bye. May the Force be with you.